Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Look at us. We're on the air. Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name is Alon.
And my name's Ara Sharinian.
On. There we go. My name is Rich.
There
my mic is on now.
Only the best at KFNX here.
His mic's on, but the little on-air light is not on, so I'm very confused. But I guess we're doing another show, another week, another show. What is this, like number 190, I think?
8,926.
Either 190 or 191, but either
way. I like
way,
Rich's number better.
We're closing in on four
years
of show.
Almost at 9,000.
Not quite, but.
Almost.
Feels like we've been on forever.
We should have like some kind of anniversary party.
In just a couple months, more like 3 months actually, we'll be hitting maybe 4 months, we'll be hitting 4 years. But that's not what we're going to talk about today. Today, I think we might talk a little bit about the madness yesterday at Play and Trade and the Scratch shenanigans.
Really, it's
surrounding the Halo 3 launch.
Countrywide madness.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Yeah, and
global.
Only the country, because apparently Australia, they fixed that issue. You think maybe like the original production run, make sure they get the U.S. ones out there, and then Australia's second or last, rather.
So probably.
They get the foam inserts.
They're probably like, oh, wait, maybe we should put these pieces of foam in the packaging.
Yeah, so.
Oh, yeah, well, we haven't shipped to Australia yet.
So here's how it goes. We're hanging out at Play and Trade. That's, Val from Play and Trade was on the show last week to talk about his little store, which actually was pretty cool.
The very cool video game store down in Chandler.
It was pretty cool.
Coolest game there. Well, but actually, one of our listeners wanted us to find them a Killer Instinct cartridge for Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
They had two copies there. So if you want it, you know where to go. But they also had, Namco X Capcom? Is that the game?
Sure.
X?
That could be
a
game.
Yeah, whatever. The Namco Capcom
something like that.
Conglomeration game, whatever the hell that is. They had that there, which I was surprised to see. And, of course, lots of tournaments. And lots of people waiting to play Halo 3. Now, one kid was like, oh, I got to check to make sure my limited edition isn't scratched. And I was like, oh, yes, definitely do that. Good idea. And he did. And the first disc he looked at, opened it up, it was scratched to hell. Like,
it was,
none of this barely cosmetic.
It was
kind
beyond
of,
scratched. It was like ripped apart.
Yeah.
With it,
all right.
Wall.
So what was his reaction when he opened the thing?
He was upset, but like I think he assumed they would take it back, right? But then the game disc, which was the second disc he looked at, that one was fine. However, his friend had both discs. Totally screwed up on them. So, kind of sucked. And I don't know if they'll be calling Microsoft to get replacements or if they replaced them at the store last night. It was just so much of a debacle. I was just like, you know what? I'm going to let you deal with this, Val, and I'm going to get out of your hair and go home. But I want to buy the limited edition one, which is the one that has this problem. But I'm going to wait until they re-release it with new packaging or something.
Or maybe buy it from Australia. Maybe check eBay Australia or something.
Yeah, according to Kotaku, like there was some guy with a friggin' 2-minute-long video to show us that he had foam in the packaging. So if you remember...
That must be awesome foam.
Yeah, I know. You remember the old PlayStation games? Like, the original PlayStation 1 games came in tall DVD-like cases. Basically just a bunch of wasted space.
Which was worst packaging design decision ever.
Yeah, it was just a special... It was, like, bigger than a DVD case. Didn't fit in any shelving unit that anyone owned, but... Anyway, they had these foam inserts that sat right on top of the disc so that the disc couldn't fall off of the little spindle holder thing.
Yeah.
And that is not on these limited edition packages, which don't have an actual click hole. They just
maybe it was like an homage to the past, because I remember every once in a while I would get a PlayStation game and it wouldn't have that thing in it, or a Saturn game. And it was just kind of like, riding around a little loose in there sometimes.
Yeah, it was a pain, actually, to see that happen, because you like your games in pristine condition. I know you're like me, Ara.
More than pristine. Beyond pristine.
So, anyway, these kids bought these games.
I buff them on a daily basis.
Yeah. Like,
not really.
No matter what, like, what do you do? Do you give them back to the store so that you can try to get it somewhere else? And you're trying to get it at midnight. So
That's what I would do.
Or do you keep it and try to return it to Microsoft? I would want to return to the store because... As I suspected, you could buy it pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
I went to Fry's today on my way home back from work. Just walked in. No one was handing the table. There were a bunch of copies of the game in all three versions. I mean, they only had two limited editions, but they probably had some, like, in the back, right? Because they only had a small table with Halo stuff on it. But they had a bunch of the originals. They even had the legendary version out there. By the way, they made a lot of legendary versions. The one that I looked at was, like, number 390,000 and something. So I don't know how limited that one was. But anyway, you can buy it anywhere. And actually, on the way home last night, I also checked to see if 7-Eleven had it, because there was all this hoopla about how 7-Eleven would be selling the game and how neat that was. And so I stopped in, and the guy said, no, we didn't get any, because nobody pre-ordered it. And I thought, you pre-ordered it? I didn't know 7-Eleven was pre-ordering their games.
That's really weird. That's like some kind of Japan thing.
It was very strange. He said, you know, I asked him, I said, so how would that have worked if I had pre-ordered it, right? Just put a few dollars down. He's like, no, pay for the whole thing. So I would have had to pay for the whole thing.
Yeah. Who would do that? I mean, like, I know 7-Eleven's really convenient and everything, but, I mean, you know, drive the extra mile to go to GameStop or whatever.
Yeah, the whole point is for convenience and not, like, the people who are buying it there and at Walmart and stuff are the people who didn't want to reserve it. Like, probably for good reason. I just didn't want to reserve the game out of spite for GameStop, basically. And
well, you know, I can certainly appreciate that.
Yeah, and so they didn't get any because nobody pre-ordered them. But the whole reason I would go there is because I wouldn't have to pre-order it. So I don't know who's really planning the marketing behind this. But I guess since they're all franchised, they make their own decisions. And, I mean, it's smart of them not to take the risk on a game they won't be able to sell.
That's just really weird.
Yeah. But why have this nationwide
campaign
for a franchise operation?
Who would pre-order a game at 7-Eleven?
I wouldn't.
Ever.
Maybe.
I mean, I would never do that.
Maybe one of our listeners.
Maybe if it came with a free slushie.
Hey, if you're listening and you've pre-ordered at 7-Eleven, give us a call, 866-536-1100.
You're insane.
Yeah, it struck me as interesting.
Don't talk over the number.
I'm sorry.
It struck me as interesting.
I'm looking at you, Rich.
When he said that they were taking pre-orders originally, and like only up to the 18th, you had to have it a week in advance. So anyway, that was our Halo 3 experience last night. We hung out at Play and Trade. We saw some shenanigans go down.
Dude.
Yeah, I was reminded of my teenage years.
Yeah.
I don't know how much we want to go into that, but I have like a little funny work story I want to relate to you guys.
After I tell people some guy was there, some stooge was buying a PlayStation 3 15 minutes before Halo 3 was being released, and then he caused all these problems because, like, oh, it comes with some accessories because of the package he bought and whatever, and so, like, there are two people on registers, and he's taking one of them away to deal with his crap.
It was pretty ridiculous.
I put a pox on you, sir.
You put a lot of heat on that guy. You were, like, you know, giving him the third degree there.
We had to remind him that it wouldn't run Halo 3.
He was buying
a
PS3 at a Halo 3 launch event. Like, that is, like, just doesn't make any sense.
No, you know what
he
was?
For the Blu-rays.
No, he was a viral marketer hired by Sony to counteract the Halo offensive.
That, and he bought an extra six-axis controller with it, which is going to be useless because the
clearly
DualShock
once again
3 is coming out.
Viral marketing.
Not useless, just not as cool.
It's useless because it doesn't have
a rumble.
You
remember the PlayStation 1? It came out with a dual analog controller, and then like a month later it came out with the DualShock controller.
Yeah, because Sony has no idea what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, it's apparently at least they're consistent in not knowing what they're doing.
Yes, they are consistent
in that.
Their
inconsistency is quite consistent.
Yes. All right, you guys ready for this?
Yeah, your work story.
So check this out. Okay, you all know, some of you listening may not know, that you know I work as a game designer. I work for a company that is called Rainbow Studios, and we're working really hard, and we're doing a lot of late nights, right?
Your car's game is not going to be number two this year, right?
Well, you know, maybe not, because the first one was so huge, and this one's not as big. But anyway... So we're like working a lot of really late nights, right? Really serious stuff. And so, you know, one night they're like, okay, we need somebody to come in real early in the morning because we need, you know, design staff on support and really early in the morning. So I was like, all right, I'll come in. And one of the testers is like, hey, you know, if you come in the morning, I'll give you a bottle of Redline. So I'm like, okay, cool, whatever. Like, I don't know what this is. So
is
I come
Redline
in
an energy drink.
Well, this I'm about to tell you. So I come in and he gives me this bottle of this thing called Redline, right? And I'm reading the label, and this is like the energy drink to destroy all other energy drinks. It's ridiculous.
Does it have yohimbine in it?
It has. I don't know what it really has in it because it has about 30 ingredients I can't pronounce, but it has more warnings on an over-the-counter product than I've ever seen in my life. Okay, first of all, it says not for use by individuals under 18. Okay? Not like be careful, just like you're not allowed to drink it if you're under 18.
How does that make sense?
Then it says somewhere else, like there's like 12 places on this bottle where it has all these different statements like running in different directions. Always begin use with a 4-ounce dose to assess tolerance. All right? Assess tolerance?
Is this,
like, this
legal
is a drink
at all?
Here. I don't know.
I'm looking at the website now, and it is funny with all these warnings that you still chose to drink it.
Yeah, yeah. And then it says, consult a licensed healthcare professional before using this product if you have or a family history of heart disease, thyroid disease, depression, if you're 20 pounds overweight. I'm not making any of this up. Apparently, like, half the population of the country just can't drink this.
We'll be back.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara.
I'm Alon.
And my name is Rich.
And Alon has a few announcements to make, doesn't he?
Well, we always like to remind everybody to head over to uat.edu. That's the website where you can learn about the University of Advancing Technology, which is a school that Rich actually attends.
And you'll need a lot of red line for that, huh, Rich?
I've never had red line before.
Known to cause spontaneous pregnancy.
Yeah, that was a good one. That
according to our chatter room. I think that was Penn who said that, Penn15. One of our very active members.
Yes, I think he's my favorite listener.
I was thinking about him earlier this week or after last week's show. I can't remember. Just thinking, like, I go to his MySpace, right? He's a super thug, right? So I've got this big old video game kill, and I don't know. It looks like he's right from the hood. And then he calls in the show. He's like, hey guys, what's up? So I had this thing.
Well, you know, he's just showing us some respect, you know, because
I guess
it's a sign of respect.
It maybe. It's very funny to me. It's like I can't tell.
Don't diss my brother, man. Don't diss him.
I guess his name's Angel, so he can't be that much of a thug.
Because
right?
Because we'll F you up.
I don't know, but does he say he's radioactive? It's funny because our first experience with him was him basically yelling at you in an email.
Yeah.
Saying that you sucked, and now he's like he's part of the Super Aura fan club.
Well, you know, sometimes on first impression, you know, people get a little bit, you know, iffy, but then they find out what I'm really like and they love me.
I do recommend that the people in the chat room go look at his MySpace page, though, because the video, I haven't seen the new one that he said I should go look at, but it's actually kind of entertaining. The song, he has like a theme song he made for himself. I don't know. It's good.
Right on. We actually have a letter. He sent me an email, and so I thought it was actually a good question, right? So I want to share it with everybody on the air. So here's my favorite listener, Pen/15's email. Hey, Ara, it's Pen15. I really want to break into the industry and need to be informed. I want to be a game designer. Who doesn't? Well, I guess amongst prepubescent boys. That was my thing. They didn't write that. But I have absolutely no technical capabilities. However, I am a writer, and unfortunately for me, those aren't in high demand, at least in the novice sense. What I was planning on doing is making video game-related spec scripts and hope someone hires me based off of it. So he goes on to say that I plan on writing scripts for some of my favorite games to hopefully get hired. If not, should I try to get a normal writing job and then eventually move on to game once I have experience in the television field? So he's basically trying to get into the industry, looking for some advice. What I would say is, Pen15, if you want to, you know, write scripts for video games, then just start doing it now. And yeah, go ahead and, you know, send them to companies that you're interested in. And, you know, the spec scripts that you write is basically going to be your resume, right, until you actually find a way to get a real one that involves, you know, work that you've done professionally. I think that, you know, most of the people who get success in the video game industry somehow start that way one way or the other. I think what you shouldn't do is, you know, try to, you know, get in as a writer and then become a designer. If you want to become a designer, then try to do design stuff and build a portfolio of design stuff, which, you know, it can be challenging in certain ways because the designer's role can be very different at different companies. You know, one thing that I did when I was trying to break into the industry was I just immersed myself, and I don't mean to be flippant about this because it was actually very hard and it took like 6 months and hundreds of hours, right? But I immersed myself into the tool set for the Unreal games, which is a free suite of tools that anybody can just, you know, pick up and go start making levels. And I mean, you know, I'm being, you know, you can't just pick it up and make something awesome, right? It takes time. But, you know, if you immerse yourself into it and if you just keep doing it over and over, you know, no matter what you do, if you keep doing over and over, if you have some capacity or skill for it, you're bound to get good. So, you know, even if you do, like, if you really want to be a writer and you want to, you know, write some video game stories or whatever, you know, the first few times, like, yeah, they're probably going to suck, right? But if you just keep doing it over and over, even if you're not getting good feedback, naturally it'll just improve over time. And you really need that kind of, like, persistence to become successful at something like this.
So now our audience here is asking, well, what exactly do you need to know to be a designer? What do you actually study?
Well, it depends on what kind of design you want to do.
I was going to say that given that I've actually studied game design,
yeah,
and you didn't study it in like an academic sense.
Right.
Perhaps
I like to consider myself, you know, a student of knowledge in general.
Yeah, well, you're sort of student by doing, whereas, like, I actually did study game design, and although I didn't get a job from it in the industry, I have friends who studied the same things I did.
Yeah.
And did move on.
Here's the thing about design, right? Especially if you don't have something credited to you yet. As far as, like, conceptual stuff goes, right? Like, ideas is what I'm talking about. And like, oh, I have this plan for a game. I have this design, right? Stuff that you write down on paper, you know what? That's worth zilch in the game industry. The game industry, employers want to know what you can do, what you can actually build and create, not what you can plan.
Yeah, it's really tough. Like, there's the people who live academically and expect, okay, I'm going to study, I'm going to do this work, and then I'm going to be able to get a job, right? And that's the way I grew up, and that's great for a lot of things. However, the video game industry is much like the entertainment industry. So, like, in Hollywood, they really don't care if you studied acting, if you
right.
don't have a reel that shows you know what you're doing,
right.
or, you know, are incredibly hot, you're not going to get a job in that particular industry, right? And so you have to, I mean, people start with commercials and whatever. Like, I don't work in Hollywood, but you know.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
They do the work and they start off with small work and they develop a portfolio to show, look, I'm good. I don't need to, you know.
Right. It's so important. It's like, I can't emphasize this enough. It's so important to be able to create a body of work that you call a portfolio, however you do it, right? I don't care if you get paid for doing it or you just do it on your own spare time for free. This is what you need, you know. One thing that I did, you know, I was like a writer for the game industry for like 4 years, right? And the whole time I was trying to get into development, right? And I had I'd written articles about game design that were published in, you know, professional journals. You know, I'd done all this academic stuff. I had, you know, I had a computer science degree. I had all this stuff to back me up, right? But no one would hire me. Why? Because they didn't care about all that, right? They cared about, okay, well, if you're a designer, what can you implement? Design is cheap, right? Ideas are cheap. They're not worth anything.
Yeah, all that extra
implementation
stuff
you did, has value.
That was all just the tiebreaker stuff. Like, if I have this guy who has a cool game and this guy has a cool game, oh, but this one also did a bunch of writing, so he's smart. Like, that's the tiebreaker.
Exactly.
The important
stuff. By itself, it doesn't stand on its own, definitely.
Yeah, and this is where I will talk about what is good about UAT, right? Having gone there, really, what you're going to learn at the school, I don't know. You're not going to learn that much from your teachers, and you're not going to learn that much from the books that you read, because, like, you could read the books on your own about game history and whatever, and you could get the tools that you're going to get at the school and build these things on your own. But the benefit of the school environment is that you're probably not working 40 hours a week, and you're in an environment that essentially forces you to do what you need to do. And they focus, at least at UAT, where my experience is, and I think Rich will back me up here, in your senior year, your last semester, you're supposed to do a class that's like portfolio assessment or something. Like,
yeah, they have a couple portfolio classes that lead up to.
They've
bred
you. I think
they have like two or three that they're like, no, you need to do it now, and then you need to do it again and again.
Yeah, they try to
better.
They breed you for 8 semesters to do this work and create portfolios and join mod groups and whatever, so that you have product, whether you're an artist and you're creating models or animation routines, or you know, a programmer or whatever, you can have actual code and actual, you know, running games or mods that mm-hmm. you can then demonstrate. So, like, my friend who worked at EA and now works at one of I think he works at Volition. I don't know. The one that's making the Conan game?
Well,
which Conan?
Volition's definitely a THQ company.
Right. The one that's making the Conan game for THQ, which is not the MMO. Which okay. I always confuse the two. Anyway, it's coming up very soon.
Yeah.
He's Nate, and he hosted this, or helped me host this show in the past.
Right on.
So he worked at UET. He worked his butt off. He was, you know, mod lead on something that ended up falling, well, it didn't really fall apart, but it didn't really come to fruition as much as expected, which is actually very common. But he was able to create whole levels and do fly-throughs and send video and have an actual portfolio, and then... Oh, wow, he got hired.
That's what you need. Basically, the gist of it is work your butt off. I mean, really work your butt off and send it to everyone. And if it's good, it'll get recognized and you'll get what you're looking for.
We'll be back after the break.
Hey, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's number one. Woohoo!
Welcome back, everyone. My name is Alon.
My name's Ara.
And my name is Rich.
Rich the Tapper.
Yep.
You realize I can hear that when you do the tap?
I know.
You're not even supposed to, like, touch the desk. All right, so we were just talking about basically ways to get into the industry, things you might do or might not do. I was espousing the benefits of going to school. Now, I say talk about UET because that's where I went.
Don't
I was espousing
Collins.
The
Don't
benefits of being Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, so... I mean, I'm sure a lot of schools offer this, but really the main benefit is that you're removed from real life for a relatively good amount of time during which you can actually put together useful stuff. Now, the problem is most people pay a bunch of money and don't do jack. They don't get any portfolio together. Yeah. They don't do anything.
In which
and they
case,
waste their time.
You should really just not pay a lot of money and don't do jack.
Yeah.
And don't get into the game industry because it's not for you.
Yeah, I mean, take the money that you would have spent on school and just, you know, do nothing in an apartment and smoke pot all day, like, if that's what you want to do. But you can actually be one of the few people who does work, gets a portfolio together, and then goes and gets the job, right? And so there are a few people who do that, like Nate, who we've had on the show before. And Ara actually spent time, buckled down, and did stuff, even though he wasn't out of school to do it. So it's proof that it's not that the school does anything special for you, except put you in an environment which encourages the learning.
Right. The school is basically just a vehicle which you can choose to take or not to take.
Yeah. One of the main benefits of the school that you can't do on your own is that you can get a team of people to work on a project that's probably larger than something you could normally do on your own.
And just because you're riding on that bus don't mean you're driving it anywhere special.
Yeah. And let me tell you, by the way, if you do get with a team of people out of school or outside of school or whatever...
Whip them on a regular basis because they'll not do any work for you.
Exactly. Be prepared for the fact, not like the possibility, but the fact that at least half of them won't do a damn thing. Even if from the very beginning they say they're devoted to it, they won't do it. So discipline in terms of yourself and timelines of projects and all that stuff, like they all come into play. And I don't want to drag this discussion on for the whole show, but discipline within yourself and the people around you working on projects that affect you is vital. And that's, like I said, that's the key to the school part, that it disciplines you or puts you in a position where you're capable of disciplining yourself and actually doing the work.
You know, I wasn't kidding about that Sylvester Stallone remark.
That's all you've been thinking about?
There's a lot of, like, I guess, mythology around his career and his pursuit of his dream, which was to make movies, right? To make Rocky into a film. And what did he do? He wrote this script, Rocky, right?
He did.
And, you know, this is one of those, you know, fable-like things, so who knows if it's really true, but I'm just going to assume it's true. You know, he pitched it to 100 different places before it got made. I mean, look, like Rocky, what an incredible success Rocky was, right?
I'm shaking my head in affirmation, but I have no idea about the history of Rocky.
And he failed 99 times before that one time where he got the success.
Exactly 99 times.
Exactly 99 times. So this is what you need to do, is you need to try exactly 99 times. And if you fail after that, then just give up, pack it in.
Yeah,
that's
no,
the limit.
That's a good message. Really?
But yep. At least try 99 times.
And now he's making another Rambo movie, so...
Yeah, I've heard about this Rambo movie, and it's supposedly very, very violent.
He's like 60 years old making a Rambo movie. Some 60-year-old dude running around in the jungle.
If you were 60 and you could make a Rambo movie, would you say no?
Yes. I would never make a Rambo movie when I'm 60 years old.
I would totally do it.
No way.
Only if you could put strippers in it.
No way.
I would totally do it, and I'd make Arnold Schwarzenegger star alongside me.
It's like...
It is 87-year-old body.
All right. Well, moving right along.
I won't have it.
All right. So this episode, we've talked about the Halo 3 launch at Play and Trade. We've talked about, things you should know about trying to get into the game industry. We also want to... I don't want to, hound on Halo 3, but we were looking at this thing about how it splits the screen up. And I guess... Well, actually, we've seen this in the beta. This did it, too, where the split screen, like Gears of War, as an example, has a horizontal split screen. So you got top and bottom, and it's the full width of the screen, and it's really difficult to play because the field of view is just, it's crazy.
Really
it's
stretched out.
You're looking at a 32x9 screen.
Yeah.
I don't see what your guys' problem is. I think that's totally sweet.
No, it's too wide.
Yeah, the game,
not possible.
The game was made.
The height.
Whatever. I'm all getting right. My head-mounted display. I'm going to have 360 panoramic everything.
So Halo 3 does it where it is a horizontal split screen like that, but they chop a little bit off the sides. And I guess, according to Joystick, there are people complaining that it chops stuff off the sides. And the only thing that could be good for on the sides is to put HUD data, but that would be too much of a difference from how it was originally built. It would just be extra effort for very little reward on the part of the programmers, I mean. I'm very, very happy that for once... They didn't try to use all the real estate, and they tried to keep closer to the correct aspect ratio.
Well, I can bet you money why they did this. I think I know the real reason why they did this.
Okay. I doubt that we'll ever get the real answer, but if I see them at an event, I'll ask them about it.
This is the real answer right here. It's because of performance reasons. I bet you that's why they did it.
I don't think that would be the reason.
I mean, I understand where you're going
Gears
with it.
Because Gears of War, when it splits the screen, it's still that same resolution, but it stretches it out. They're just not stretching the image.
Okay, well, they're stretching it, so that's different, right? But what I'm saying is that if they actually used more of the screen, in other words, if they actually revealed more of the play area by accommodating, you know, those blank areas that are there now...
Well, then it'd be a completely different resolution that the game's
created. Yes, but my point is
that... Well, it's not that hard to change field of view.
Well, I don't know.
My point is that, you know, with the greater, you know, depth of field, which would be essentially what they're doing, right, the game has to draw... that many more things, and it's that much of a hit on performance. It's already a huge hit on performance as it is when you have to draw two whole scenes essentially on one screen. So I'll bet you lunch and everything like that that it was because they did it for performance reasons.
I think it had to do with the actual gameplay for it.
I don't know. It's a better solution than everybody else has done.
Because all they do is really, they give you the scene that you would normally see in one player and then chop off a bunch from the top and the bottom or some parts of it, whatever. And so you just get part of what you would normally see. And they probably widened it a little bit. So you see a little bit more wide, but you also don't see a lot in terms of height.
Well,
and it sucked in the past.
Yeah.
All I have to say about that is I'm waiting for them to resurrect the 360-degree view, field of view, that they did in Marathon 2, which was totally sweet, because when you're walking around, the stuff on the sides of the screen, that's behind you.
I never played Marathon.
That's awesome. Just visualize that, right? The edges of the screen are really behind you. You can see
really confusing.
Everything.
In Marathon 2, were you like some there was omnipotent power?
Well, there's some kind of like power-up that you got that did that. It wasn't like that all the time.
That's weird.
That is kind of strange.
It's fantastic.
Okay, so... I like it, and I've actually always said that what they should do is basically make two 16x9 screens and then offset them. So the first player is on the top left of the screen, and the second player is on the bottom right. And then you could use that empty space for, if it's in multiplayer, for like the stats of all the positions of each player, you know, first through eighth or whatever, however many people are playing, right? So you could use that for data in multiplayer. In the cooperative game, I don't know how much you would be putting in the empty space, but anyway, I was happy to see that they did it. I don't know why people are complaining and whining about it.
It's because there's something to complain about.
Yeah, I don't know if it's really a question of performance, but whatever. You know what? When we see him at GDC and whatever, we can ask.
Okay,
you
that's
just remind me that you want to ask.
That's a $5 bet on top of the $5 you already owe me, so maybe you have a chance to redeem yourself.
Wow, we're going
and you owe
from
me
a burger
hamburger,
to
I think, right?
Lobster tail.
That's
at this
right.
Point. I promised you something.
A hamburger or some sort.
Shut up. All right. So now there was also something that we saw regarding Dave Perry. He's actually been in the news a lot lately, which is weird because, like, I don't remember him.
He hasn't done anything
games.
Recently.
You know what? David Perry is very, very good at marketing himself.
He won, like, my Man of the Year a couple of years ago on the radio show I think it was last year.
Your Man of the Year?
Yeah, like, Humanitarian of the Year.
Okay, because I was about to say, I hope you're not being sexist.
No. He was, because he basically said, people are asking him how to get into the game industry something like that. And he said, you know what? Here's what I think you should do. You should play, like, pick your system of choice, computer, console, or whatever, and find 100 good games on that system and play them for real and give a real review of each game, right? And if you could do that and submit those all to him, he would end up creating a personal letter of recommendation for you.
And maybe you could write for a game magazine then.
Yeah. I can't even remember what the whole thing was about, but it was very cool, and he was willing to actually talk to people who were doing that challenge of his. It was great. Dave Perry Challenge. Anyway, we'll be back after this break with more.
Welcome back, everybody, to the final segment of Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name is Ara.
I'm Alon.
And my name is Rich.
So we wanted to talk about Dave Perry.
David Perry, yes.
You had
some
choice
dude
words.
That
well,
did some stuff.
You know what? There's this headline on Joystick, right? And they're like, oh, David Perry's dogging the Wii. Oh, wow, we can't say anything bad about Nintendo.
He's basically saying everything that I said before it ever came out.
Right, and I mean, you know, I've voiced similar criticisms of, you know, the problems that are inherent in the Wii interface. And you know what? Like, they're there. Right? That's the reality. There are some serious problems with using the Wiimote in a lot of games. And I don't even know why this is a big deal. I mean, what? Like, Nintendo is beyond reproach because they're Nintendo? I mean, come on.
There's something about this newness and the concept of the innovation and stuff. And I was saying, you know what? Gamers require accuracy. And now he's calling him out saying he's very surprised that the fanboys, like all the gamers that praise the Wii so much, are willing to accept the lack of accuracy inherent with the Wii.
Well, I think that there's still like a sense of newness with this thing, and I think the novelty is going to wear off after maybe a year or two, and I think by that point, people are going to get really, really sick of these issues. Yeah. And these issues are going to surface for what they really are. I think people now are still kind of like in this, you know, what's the word, like halcyon mode of like, oh, I'm moving this thing on the screen and I've got the
Wii
mode.
I do wish you
mode.
All could see how Ara was waving his hands just a moment ago. Like a raver. I mean, you'll notice it like all the recent Nintendo systems, it's a bunch of Nintendo games that are okay, and then games by everybody else all suck. And it's like, if there was ever a system to cater to that marketplace, it's the Wii.
Although, you know what? I've played a game recently that doesn't suck.
Which one? The Billiards one?
The Kororinpa Marble Mania.
Oh, yeah.
Which I've been meaning to talk about,
the
actually.
The game's only $30, brand new, by the way.
This is really cool. You know, I actually haven't played... What's that other game?
Marble Madness?
No. Monkey Ball on the Wii, and I heard it was crap.
Super Monkey Ball? Super
I thought
Monkey
it was
Ball.
Crap when I played it.
Yeah,
cool
pretty much everybody who's played that game told me it's crap, and this is really the same kind of
Let's clarify. That
theme.
Game is awesome, but it sucks on the Wii.
Yeah, it was good on the GameCube when I played
Well, first,
it
okay,
yeah.
first one, awesome.
It's monkeys
second,
and balls
second
around.
Second one, they were smoking crack on the level design, and then now this Wii thing everybody says is crap. I'll just take the word for it.
There's no control.
Here's a really interesting thing about this Marble Mania game, which, okay, there's not a lot of stages in it, but I highly recommend that people give it a try, because in this game, when you're holding the Wii controller, right, the Wii, basically, the controller represents the position of the board, right? And unlike, you know, some of the other marble rolling type games, you can essentially basically move your controller into any arbitrary orientation, and that's where the board goes, right?
So accurately?
Well, you know, there's a little lag. The lag is, you know, an issue, as it is with, you
know,
but most...
I mean, you can also accommodate the lag because you become used to it, as long as it's still accurate.
Right, right. So it's, I mean, it's a one-to-one thing, right? So if you flip it upside down, the board's upside down, all that stuff. And here's a really, really cool thing about this, is that on the GameCube and Monkey Ball, when you're rotating the board using the joystick, right, when you've got the board at an angle, it's an inherently unstable position because you're holding the joystick against resistance the whole time, and it's very hard to modulate, right? So it's unstable. You know what I'm saying?
I would think that would make it more stable. It's all the way to the end.
No. Not when it's all... No. But you never do that in that game, right? Because it's all about finessing it. So you're always holding the board at an intermediate state, which is unstable, not all the way.
Yeah, okay, that I agree.
All right? Here's the cool thing about this Kororinpa game is that, really, if you take care to hold the thing in the right way, the Wiimote, every single position is just as stable as the other. You know, so what you can do is you can, you know, move the marble over, like, these really extreme kind of angles and stuff, right? So, like, you can go 90 degrees, and when you're 90 degrees, right, if you just make sure that you're holding it upright and not, like, moving your hands at an angle, you're still actually at a stable state. So it's just really interesting to kind of, like, manipulate the board that way, and it was a lot of fun. And
sounds
I highly
like
recommend
I wouldn't
it.
Be able to play it.
You would be able to play it. Actually, like, I had this dream of, you know, the ultimate Wiimote controller for this game would be like a perfect sphere, so you could just hold your two arms out like this and just, like, with your fingers just kind of rotate
all of our
the
listeners
sphere.
They're definitely looking at you do that.
I know, but
you can
no,
just
yeah.
hold it out
I
like
have
this
to,
folks
you
I have
to hold it
I have to do this I have
ball.
To gesticulate in order to
and
I
you
have no problem with
your
that
fingers
properly.
Okay,
you know, that's you know, scientists research these
wouldn't you rather have a
brilliant.
Cube
No, because the cube has, like, these edges. I just want a perfect sphere so I can just go...
You know what? We don't need a sphere. We need a board that we can stand on and move around on it, and it'll know how we're standing.
Okay, well, you know, that
that's what we need.
Too.
You mean, like, a Wii Fit?
The Wii Fit board? Or the balance
the Wii
board?
The balance board?
Whatever it's officially called, yeah. That's amazing. I can do yoga on my Wii on a board.
Oh, yeah. Also, unfortunately, the graphics and the sound sucked in that game, but the design is really sweet.
All right. Well, only $30. Go take a look.
Only $30. Unfortunately, only plus 40 levels. So what? That's like, what, like 75 cents per level, but, you know.
Oh, that's terrible.
Most people won't get past the first five. Seriously, only 40 levels, though?
Yeah, I think there's 10 bonus levels, so maybe that bumps it back up to, you know, maybe 60 or 50 cents a level.
60. Okay.
That's a pretty good price, I think. I think that's fair.
Right on. Hey, listen, you could buy one level of Guitar Hero online for like $2.
Yeah.
So
that was pretty. That's ridiculous.
$267. I don't know what it comes out to be.
Way too much money.
So let's see. You
for
know,
a single song.
I've got a couple other things to say about the Vanillaware games. Unless you guys got
the what?
I don't know what you mean by Vanillaware.
Odin Sphere.
Means. Oh, those games.
And this other game called Grim Grimoire.
Dude.
You know, what, you were telling me this game. You referred to Grim Grimoire as a side view RTS.
Yeah.
That makes no sense at all.
Is it? Well, at first, it doesn't, right? Because you're like, what is this? How could they do this? It's side view? That doesn't make sense. But no, it's fine. It works fine.
Can
instead
you try
of
to
like,
express what that is?
What's that?
It's
a side
it's like
view
a,
RTS?
Like a 2D?
It's just like an RTS, except it's all side view. So there's like floors and there's...
No.
Steps connecting. What do you mean, no? That's what it is. And there's steps connecting the floors, and you have, instead of bases, you have these weird, I don't know, these magical portal things, and instead of, like, armies, you have, like, you know, elves and fairies and demons with nice asses and things like that.
Right. I don't believe you.
Right on. Okay, so this game was one that you returned after, or sent back to Gamefly, right?
Yeah, so that one I returned. I actually ended up buying Odin Sphere. I thought both of those were really interesting games.
Let's get back to Grim Grimoire. What were the reasons for your getting rid of it? Because if I recall, you told me that you only played it for a very short period of time.
I played it for about 2 hours. And I have to say that I really honestly gave it as fair a try as I could have given any game. I was like, after those 2 hours, I was definitely sure, like, I'm definitely not playing this anymore.
Okay. So even though you really only had good things to say about it.
Well, here's the problem, right? One of the problems, and this is kind of endemic to the recent Vanillaware games, also happens in Odin Sphere.
Means.
Endemic?
Vanillaware.
No, that's the name of the company, Vanillaware.
Oh, okay. I was really confused.
No, this isn't some kind of weird like jargon I'm using,
what
guys.
What is Vanillaware?
I thought you were just trying to say it was a very tame game.
Yeah, no. Okay. They're not tame games at all. The company is called Vanillaware, the developer.
It's a side yeah. RTS.
Yeah. Anyway,
doesn't make sense.
Here's the problem, right? First of all, your view into the world is like tiny because VanillaWare, they love to do these absolutely lush, beautiful 2D graphics like you've never seen.
The problem is that it looked very good.
It looks so good, but your view is like stamp-sized into this world, and you end up having to scroll the screen everywhere, even at like the maximum zoom level, or the minimum, I guess, would be that. Yeah. And the graphics are so beautiful and so busy that you actually have like a hard time distinguishing like, oh, my armies are here and my guys are there, and actually like reading the screen is kind of a pain in the butt.
They need cell shading with those thick borders so you can see your
stuff. They need to do something, right? But it's very beautiful looking.
So that's what I wanted to get out of you, that the main problem with this game is that it looks too good.
It looks too good.
It looks too good. That's Ara's complaint.
What can't Ara complain about?
It looks too good.
Not these.
All right, hey, somebody send me an email if and when they ever figure out when the hell Rock Band is releasing, because I still don't get it.
Yeah.
If they're ever coming out with it.
Will come out.
Thank you for listening, since you really could be playing Halo 3. I really appreciate it, and we'll be back next week. I might actually have a chance to play it by then.
Yeah.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.